Welcome to the Speaker's Corner Show. My name is Heiko Koo. The show is broadcast every Friday at 2:30 p.m. on 104.4 Resonance FM. This week's show is a recording from my own meeting from the 14th of March 2010. You can come down to Speaker's Corner and join us any Sunday afternoon, or you can visit our website at speakerscorner.net.
A young Englishman here, another Irish, couple of Irish over there, Tunisian over here. These are the regular gang of the meeting at the moment. We've got more, but they'll remain anonymous. There will be others who will arrive during the course of the meeting. And we have a sort of turnover of people who come through Speaker's Corner. And I've done a lot of interviews at Speaker's Corner with people. I do a radio show once a week about Speaker's Corner. And over the years, I've interviewed people, and quite a few of the. When did you first come to Speaker's Corner?
When I was about 17.
When was that?
About 50 years ago.
About 50 years ago, the gentleman here first came to Speaker's Corner. And did your father go to Speaker's Corner?
No, my uncle brought me.
So there's generations going backwards, which you can find, who have a connection, probably going right the way back. Probably your uncle and his uncle took him. When did you first come to Speaker's Corner?
1966.
Did your dad bring you here as well?
Dad, no. He died in 1942. Oh,
but did your parents ever come to Speaker's
no,
Corner?
No.
Okay.
Well,
anyway, I think you have a connection going backwards, you know, throughout the history of the last 100 years, the gentleman here 50 years at Speaker's Corner, one way or another, gives you an idea about the sort of continuity of it. The thing is, you come here and you gather, you can be anonymous here, but you can also associate with people at Speaker's Corner, make friends with people at Speaker's Corner, find out new ideas at Speaker's Corner. There was quite a famous writer at one time. He was actually the first Trotskyist in Britain, by the name of Frank Ridley, and he spoke here in 1926, and he wrote a pamphlet in which he called Speaker's Corner the university of the people, because here you can learn about any idea you want to learn about. Now, there are many people who think that it's very superficial and insane the way in which people talk at Speaker's Corner, which to some degree is true, but actually religion itself, I mean, after all, what are these people, you know, even the religious fanatics, as they call them, they appear religious fanatics because they're standing in Hyde Park. But if you go into a church and you've got a, let's just take an archetypal example, a Catholic priest who abuses children standing on the pulpit talking about religion, well, which is worse, to have a guy at Speaker's Corner pounding his Bible, or a guy in a local community who's a priest abusing the local kids and preaching about God? So which is more insane and which is worse? I tend to think that the priest abusing the kids is worse. And therefore the idea that Speaker's Corner lacks some nobility or lacks some dignity or lacks depth or lacks logic, lacks sense, I think is idiotic. And I think it reflects a certain culture within society that you have to wait for some specialist to appear who knows about things and brings you this information, and that you can't possibly pick that up in a corner of a park on a Sunday afternoon. It must come from the television or from the newspaper. Someone came up to me earlier on in the meeting we had this afternoon, earlier this afternoon, and said to him, oh, everyone gets their news and their ideas from the media. And it's true that a lot of people do get their ideas from the media. But why do they conceptualize the media as being an important source of information? There was a young lady who wrote an essay about Speaker's Corner once a few years ago. And she said to me, when she went to her university and handed in her essay, in the references, she put a quotation and then put number one, Speaker's Corner, source of the quotation, Speaker's Corner. And the professor turned around and said, how can you put Speaker's Corner as a reference? Well, the question you have to ask is, how can you put almost anything as a reference? If you put a newspaper as a reference, it's valid. But who's to say that a journalist who writes in the newspaper is a valid source of information? Or a history professor at a university, in theory, of course, they're supposed to do the research, but often, of course, they're also scoundrels, paid, if you like, prostitutes of the ruling class to design historical information and structure it together in such a way as to serve the interests of those who are in power in society. And therefore, we do have to have a certain healthy scepticism towards official sources of information which are generally accepted as valid and viable, reliable sources of information.
Can I ask a question? It's important.
A question? Yes.
I come up to Speaker's Corner because I like China. Is it true or false they built factories with no money, with voluntary labour? Is it true or false in the beginning?
Is it true or false that the Chinese built factories with no labour?
Well, but with no money.
With no money, sorry, no money. Not no labour, no
true
money.
True or false?
Well, what is money? Money is the accumulated wealth incarnated in a piece of paper or a coin or a number on a computer. In other words,
slavery.
Sorry?
They didn't, you were asked whether they built money without labour. And yet the labour. No. What happened was the Chinese, there was a ruined society, right? They could use forced labour, as many other societies did, to do what normally you would do for money. You pay people in kind. The idea that it's different. China is like any other state. All states are much the same. They end up, they start with a new tomorrow, a new bright dawn, and it ends up with the same murky, dirty mid-morning every time.
In order to establish an industrial base, you have to acquire capital. Now that means money, or it means resources, which are effectively the same thing, from somewhere. Where are they going to get it from? In a country, one sec. In a country that is ruined, where are they going to get it from? Well, it could be one or the other of these phenomena. Either you have forced labour, which they had, or you have voluntary labour, which they had. They did have as well. It would be foolish to deny it. They did have voluntary labour as well. Or you have paid labour, which they also had. How do you think capital is acquired in the first place? In order to establish modern capitalism in the West, how do you think they acquired the capital? Well, one aspect was that. Queen Elizabeth ordered John Hawkins and Francis Drake to make an expedition to capture Africans, to take them to the Caribbean, to put them in plantations, to work till they die in order to extract wealth, sugar and surpluses from the populations of Central and Latin America and the Caribbean. Sorry?
Funny how you move off from China.
I am explaining, no, on the contrary. This is explaining the fundamental question of the accumulation of capital. In China, they needed to accumulate capital to industrialize. They are still accumulating capital to industrialize. Now, they are doing what in the 1850s was done in Britain. That's what they're doing in China now. Industrializing, and moving from an agricultural to an urban society.
Does communist philosophy support that?
It's a very important question. Very important question. Does communist philosophy, the gentleman asks, support this accumulation of capital? Originally, Karl Marx believed that communism and socialism would start in England, France, and Germany. In other words, where capital had already acquired supreme domination, where industry dominated agriculture, where the city dominated the countryside. Workers would take over the running of the factories and administer society themselves, democratically, through elected workers' councils, what you later called Soviets, but at the time, the only example was the Paris Commune, where you had elected municipality, where all officials were recallable, and where the people controlled the city of Paris for a short period of time. The idea of Marx was that this would happen first in the richest countries, then spread by not only example, but also by the superiority of collective production, whereby England, France, and Germany, when they become communist, would export communism to the rest of the world. Now, Marx was wrong on that. What happened was that the revolutions did not break out in France, England, and Germany first. They broke out first in Russia, a backward peasant country. However, that also doesn't resolve the problem, because Marx himself didn't resolve the problem adequately. Because even if you would have had revolution in England, France, and Germany, in Marx's time, what would the consequence have been for Africa, China, Latin America, and Asia? Still, these countries would have had to industrialize, would have had to urbanize, would have had to create the domination of the cities over the countryside, create the domination of industry over agriculture. And therefore, inevitably, you had to have the same process of urbanization, which means the acquisition of capital from the peasantry and from pre-socialist forms of production. What does that mean? It means if somebody has a small shop selling ice cream and cups of tea and coffee, that is not large-scale production. That's not like Ford's motor cars or General Electric or Sony or Canon. This is small-scale production. Now, small-scale production and small-scale capital is a feudal element in society. It's the same as what existed in London for 1,000 years and more. Small-scale, petty production.
What's the place of the service industry?
Yeah, I'll come on to that one sec. The peasantry. When the peasantry worked on the land, they dug the land with their backs. In China, they still do. In India, they still do. In much of Latin America. In Africa. Therefore, how do you move from that state of economic backwardness towards modernity, where the fact of the matter is, no matter how much people eulogize the happy peasant, if you actually ask people who have moved from the countryside to the city in Africa, India, Latin America, or China, if they want to go back to the countryside, 95% will say no. Because once they acquire a taste of modern life, they don't want to go and dig and break their backs every day, digging the land, hoping for rain. That's not the life the majority of mankind wants, nor is it necessary. Because advanced agricultural methodologies are capable of feeding the entire planet. We don't require small plots of land with people digging them. We don't require that in order to feed the world's population. But capital, if it is insufficiently developed, is incapable of, if you like, incorporating the majority of mankind. That's why we have the insanity of a world with enormous modern developments in technology, in science, able to send rockets into the heavens, able to provide biotechnology, nanotechnology, to delve into the human cells, to go backwards in time in investigation of the origin of the species and of the planets. And at the same time, we are unable to raise the living standard of the majority of humanity. In fact, what's happened is, in the last 2 years, the world has gone backwards in economic development. Backwards. Total world production has declined. Total world trade has declined. For the first time since the 1930s, world production and world trade has gone backwards. Living standards in America, Britain, Europe have fallen in the last years. Why? At the same time as we have new technology, new science, knowledge and capacity to produce, intercommunication of man across the entire planet, where all of us are able to produce more than the day before, are cleverer than the day before, and yet the system of production is unable to produce more than the day before. It is because capitalists have gone on strike. Those who have capital do not make enough profit, so they do not invest. Now, capital accumulation,
therefore, is limited in its scope. Capitalism is limited in its ability to develop mankind's future. After all, if you look, for example, at the comparison with Chinese investment in Africa in the last 10 years and Western investment in Africa in the last 400 years, the Chinese in many areas have outstripped America, Britain, France, Belgium, Portugal in what they've done in Africa in 10 years alone, simply because the deals that they make are deals for the purposes of state development, roads, schools, hospitals, infrastructure, rather than to extract profits for multinational corporations to enrich shareholders, which are controlled by bankers and pension funds in the West, to enrich a few billionaires in the world. For example, 225 billionaires in the world today own more wealth than half of the entire planet. 47% of mankind owns less wealth than 225 individuals. Individuals, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this insanity of accumulation, of wealth which they cannot even spend.
It's their wealth, man. What's your problem?
How do you mean it's their wealth?
It's their wealth.
Whence is the origin of that wealth?
You've got to earn it.
My friend. Huh? 20 years ago, you remember the Soviet Union existed.
China's going to put
One second. Let me answer what you're saying. Then you respond.
They use your mind. They use your skill. Yes?
Their skill and their mind. My friend. 20 years ago, you will accept... One second. Because I want to respond to what you've said. You're making a statement. I presume you want to debate the question and discover whether something's right or not.
Why shall they give their money to you?
I'm trying to respond. You're asking a question. I presume that's why is the beginning of a question, right? So therefore, a response would be adequate. Now, 20 years ago, in the Soviet Union, no one was allowed to earn more than £700-£800 a month, officially, legally. And yet, within 5 years of the collapse of the Soviet Union, there were several individuals, Chernomodin, Bezerodsky, Abramovich, Khodorkovsky, for example, who had acquired billions of dollars of wealth. Billions of dollars of wealth.
Now,
I'm not saying that they are representative of everybody, but I'm pointing out that there are some examples, well-known examples, of individuals, many of them who live in London, who acquired billions of dollars. Did they do it by hard work?
Bill Gates.
Okay, Bill Gates.
Alan Sugar. Yeah. Who are these people?
So you accept some billionaires.
No, you accept some.
Hang on, I will come on to that now. I will come on to your point about Bill Gates. The argument you made was, originally you made a blanket statement. Come with your argument. You want to get on to Bill Gates? You want to get on to Bill Gates? No Bill Gates. No, I'm asking you to contribute now.
Why are you running away?
The gentleman here originally made a statement, which was a blanket statement, that they acquired their wealth by hard work. I utilized the example of Russia, which everybody knows is evidence that it is not people acquiring wealth by hard work. However, there are people like Bill Gates, like Richard Branson. I know you got your wealth through hard work as well. I know you did. This man here, an Italian, poor background, came to London in the 1950s, I believe, worked his way up in a restaurant. Now he owns several restaurants. Now he's got a lot of money, drives a big flashy car. Good. I don't have any problem, my friend, except you never invite me for dinner. He promises, but never carries through. And instead, because he felt guilty, one day he came here with a Russian hat. He says, have a Russian hat. No big deal. I wore it the other day. It was kept me warm in the snow. No problem. Kept me warm in the snow. So I don't mind. On the other side, we have to analyse what actually is. Now, there are some people who many people say, well, they got their wealth through hard work. But in reality, of course, when you deal with the billions, not millions, billions, my friend is probably, I don't know, a couple of million he's got. 10, 20, 30, 50.
Are you single?
He's got a couple of million. Yes, I think he is.
Yeah, well, no, he's married.
He's married. He's married, but what they say on Facebook, it's complicated. It's complicated. So, if you want to move over there. But the idea that the billions are acquired from hard work, of course, is nonsense. Except in this respect.
Why is it nonsense?
If you're a billionaire, you do acquire wealth from hard work. But it is not from your hard work, it's from the hard work of others. It's impossible to work in such a way as to acquire billions from...
Do you think communism in the days of the Eastern Bloc was an equal society?
I'll come on to that just one second. Just one second.
She was there.
So was I. So was I. Does that answer the question? No. Your practical living experience can allow you to make some judgments about the world. They can be right or wrong. If you lived in communism, as they called it, I lived in East Germany, I lived in China, does that mean my opinion about China is right? No. If you lived in Poland or Lithuania or Latvia or Russia, or China, does that mean your opinion about the country is right? No. We have to try as children of the scientific age to assess on the basis of knowledge. That's the only way we can assess.
Because she was there, that's what I'm
I was there as well. I just told you that I was also there. But the fact that I was there, I heard you.
Where if you give an item to a child, they will share it amongst everybody around. Right. That is true communism.
Right. Well,
and it works at that level, not on the level of the Russians and the Chinese.
I'm trying to explain by what means you can assess this question. It is not a purely subjective question. It is not something that's resolved by my opinion or the lady's opinion or your opinion. Nor should it be. Because science begins not just from our personal experience, it begins from generalizing and abstracting. It begins when you take away from my personal viewpoint and you look at something and you see what appears to be one way and you dig beneath the surface. And then you discover...
So you see the Marquis eating in upmarket restaurants.
That's really not what...
Equivalent to a Western restaurant.
Right.
While the rest of the population eat in virtual soup kitchens.
Yes. So what does that signify to you?
That something is very, very, very off balance in that sense.
Correct. So what is that thing which is off balance?
Corruption.
And what is the root of that corruption?
Human nature.
Is it human nature?
Yes.
The lady just told us that in primitive societies, which she's been visited, which
on, no, she didn't say primitive.
She said economically backward. Economically backward. That's a perfectly neutral term, right? In developing countries, for example, I've also been in villages in Malaysia and the quiet little hamlet town where people still live a very simple natural economy, where you can throw out a net into the sea, pull it out a few hours later, it's full of fish. In those circumstances, does one person sit and gorge all the fish? No. Once they can trade on the marketplace and exchange that fish and acquire capital and move away, yes, then it begins to acquire a certain capitalist dynamic. On the other side, the lady was pointing out that there were societies, in other words, the implication being, like Adam and Eve, the fall of man, is caused by the emergence of property. In other words, that there is inherent in man, according to the explanation that you gave, in pre-industrialism, or pre-feudalism, or pre-slavery, some form of collectivity which is rooted in the nature of man.
It's lost when it becomes...
It's lost. In other words, if the lady is saying, as she just has said, that it's lost, paradise lost, if there is
some... Who used the word paradise?
I used it, Milton actually used it. I was trying to use from that phrase. Now, if there is some lost phase of human development, which was collective and which is harmonious, then human nature is not what creates capitalism or corruption.
But it is what creates the corruption when it comes to...
Now, if, on the other side, the acquisition of certain quantities of wealth provides the foundation
for
the...
Human nature has many facets.
Right, exactly. Whereas your daughter here said, human nature governs the emergence of corruption.
Yes, of course.
Yes, it's part of human nature.
It's part of is another question. If human nature is what creates corruption, then of course you could argue that human nature will always lead to corruption.
Human nature also creates love and compassion.
Thank you, thank you. So there is no human nature. We have a multifaceted human nature. Yes, we have a multifaceted... Right, right. So if it's multifaceted, if it has many elements and many contradictions within it, then you cannot extrapolate from that that... You cannot... If human nature is multifaceted and integrates love, compassion, humanity, collectivity, corruption, greed, hatred, murder, care for other people, if all these different elements constitute human nature, then there is no fixed human nature which is reflected in social formations. Instead of this, social formations create, shape, and alter human nature, and human nature alters, creates, and shapes human structures. And therefore, there is no fixed formation which we can call human nature. It is an ever-changing process within humanity. For example, a great deal of archaeological evidence has turned up about the nature of man hundreds of thousands of years ago. And in many of these circumstances, where people have investigated the origins of modern man from 100,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago, they have discovered that in burial chambers and in burial areas, often you'll find parts of human bodies that have quite clearly been eaten by other human beings. Cannibalism is an extremely common trait in archaeological digs discovering about human past, human origin. And yet, cannibalism nowadays is extremely rare. In other words, human nature changes under specific circumstances. Ecological, social, environmental, climatic circumstances change the nature of man and their behavior.
That was the Speaker's Corner show for this week. Tune in again, same time, same place, 2:30 p.m. on 104.4 Resonance FM on Fridays, or 4:30 p.m. on Sundays. You can come down and join us at Speaker's Corner any Sunday afternoon from noon till dusk, or you can visit our website at speakerscorner.net.